as we bring former Penn State great Leroy Thompson in. Leroy, first of all, I want to welcome you to the program. You're a friend of this great city. You do a lot of great work. You've helped a lot of lives. I want to commend you for that, first of all. You are a Penn Stater to the core, and my condolences on the loss of Joe Paterno to you, my friend.
I appreciate that, Tony. It's good to be on the show.
Let's talk about Joe Paterno, the impact he had on your life all these years later. Leroy, we're not getting any younger, my friend. That was, 25 or so years ago that you decided to go and play for him. And when I first got down here, I saw these Leroy Who buttons they used to have. They used to give them outside of Neyland Stadium. They were loving you back in the day. But talk about Paterno, your decision to cast your lot with him, and the impact he's had on you all these years later.
Well, going back to the decision to go to Penn State versus UT, it was just simple. I grew up on a University of Tennessee campus, only about 5 minutes from there, and didn't get a whole lot of chances to get outside of Tennessee and see the world, so I just wanted to do something different. My recruiting trips were really the only opportunity that I got outside the world. I seen the ocean for the first time on a recruiting trip to Miami, and other than just being a kid that and I just wanted to diversify, do something a little different, and get away from home, because I just didn't have the money to travel as a young kid, and my opportunity to do so was to get away from home. Penn State, it was happened circumstance. I had a final visit. They were recruiting me earlier my junior year as a defensive back, so I wasn't very interested in Penn State for that reason. But the end of the year, they turned the tables. They lost Ricky Waters to Notre Dame that particular year, and they turned their attention to myself and Gary Brown, who was a local guy out of Williamsport, PA. And once they found out that I still did have an interest, if they were going to play me at running back, then Jim Caldwell, who was turns out to be the Indianapolis Colts coach, has just got fired, was the guy that came down here. And he stayed out here 2 weeks, and then Paterno ended up coming down a couple of times, coming over to my little apartment, Prince Hall Apartments on Dandridge Avenue. And basically, he didn't pay me any attention when he came on the recruiting trips. He wooed my family, my brothers and sister. They got to know him pretty well that weekend, because he spent a whole lot of time with them playing cards, and just I sat in the corner like, when is this guy going to talk to me? Found out later that was a great recruiting ploy, because my mom fell in love with him. He's very funny, very comfortable in a really hood setting, for lack of better words. He couldn't drive me around, but I could drive him around town, and we drove around. I had this big, bright yellow Mustang, raggedy as all outdoors, so he would just hop in my car, and we would drive around town and have a chance to talk. And I can remember there was only a couple of promises. I was being promised everything across the country. I think that year me and Emmett Smith were tied for the top running backs coming out that particular year. So you can imagine the things that are coming at you as a 16, 17-year-old kid in recruiting. But the only thing Paterno offered me, it was, I remember, five things. He said, you have the opportunity to play as a freshman. I did. He said, you will graduate in 4 years. I did. He said, you'll have the opportunity to play for a national championship. Had the opportunity to play for a national championship. We didn't quite get there, but we certainly had the opportunity, being ranked number 3 and losing against Florida State. Said, we'll prepare you for pros. Played pros for 6 years, 7 years in the NFL. And he also said that we'll prepare you for a life after football. And life after football, for me, has been pretty good. That was the only promises that he made. So what you saw is what you got with Coach Paterno for the you know, 60 years. And the main thing that when folks ask me what is the most incredible stat that I could think of when it comes to Coach Paterno, it's the fact that, I mean, 89 to 90% of the student athletes that come out of that program, they graduate. And I don't think there is a bolder statement that you can make to that, because it leads to a life after football. And from the time you step on that campus, you know that you're not just there to play football. You understand that you're there to be a student athlete. You're there for other reasons that are more important than that gridiron.
Which is really interesting. You know, the interesting thing about Paterno is there's a kind of a dichotomy there with him, in that he wanted people to be whole, okay? And he wanted people to be well-rounded. And he wanted his athletes to be about more than football, right? But then he would admit to you that if he were to not have his job, I mean, he said it. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't have any hobbies. I really don't have any other interest. This is what I do. Football coach, that's who I am. I don't know what I would do without this job. Isn't that kind of, don't you think it's kind of an interesting, you juxtapose those two concepts there, Leroy. Isn't that kind of an interesting thing when you think about Paterno?
Yeah, it is, but just like in other careers, we find our joys. In sports, it's nothing like sports, and I tell my kids all the time, when people give sports a big rap, there is no other activity that's a better teacher of teamwork, of having heart, working yourself through challenging situations, pushing your mind and your body further than you ever think you could push it, relationships, good attitudes, bad attitudes, great heart, no heart, good athleticism, challenges, the whole game, if for lack of better words, of life, no matter what occupation that you're in, sports is a great teacher of that. And that's, if we go back to your comment, that's what Paterno took the platform of being a good coach. But he also took that platform to teach how to be a humanitarian, to teach how you invest in education. He also, we were no different than any of the other students on campus. When we were in class, we were a social security number just like the other kids. When he was on campus, he lived on campus. He walked to the practice field just like we had to walk to the practice field from our dorms and from our apartments. He never put us above any of the other sports or any of the other students on campus. He went overboard to make sure that we didn't think we were hot stuff, so to speak, just because you were a Penn State player, that you still handled yourself in a manner and carried yourself in a manner that the entire university would be proud of. Now, don't get me wrong.
Right.
He did have an allegiance. He did have, of course, if guys were out of line, if they've got in trouble, he would want to come to their back. But he also wanted them to be treated no different from average student on campus just because they were a football player. But he took that platform of being a football coach, which he ate, slept, and drank. And Sue had to marry that. And if you're going to become, if you're going to marry a Bill Parcells, you're going to marry a Joe Paterno, you're going to marry a Nick Saban, you know that you either accept that life, that they're a coach. That's what they do. That's what God put them on the earth to do. And they're going to bless through that particular occupation. And that's what he was able to do. He was able to take that platform of being Joe Paterno and raise millions and millions of dollars. Not for himself, because he never would take a high salary. A $4 or $5 million salary he could have had 10 years ago, 20 years ago, as Saban and those guys are just getting now. He refused to take that. he would rather take that money and dedicate it to the library on campus. He would rather take that money and dedicate it to research. He would rather take that money and have them invested in better facilities so that we could take advantage of it versus him taking advantage of it. And that's just the way he lived. But I did hear, you know, when they were trying to get him to step down in a few years before when they were going through a bad slide there, and someone asked, well, why won't you retire? And he said, well, what do you want me to do? Cut lines for a living?
Hey, Leroy, my favorite story is when the president of the university and somebody else showed up in the middle of all that, and they said, Joe, the board, you know, they're kind of wanting you to resign. What do you think of that? And he said, well, I think you need to get the hell off my porch. That's kind of what I think. And they got off his porch, Leroy. I mean, the guy, here's the thing about...
And then he went 11-1 the next year, by the way.
Yeah, well, the guy is so... Well, that's right. And the guy... The amazing thing about a guy like that, when you think back on it, is we've come to an age where it's all about the money now. And the guy lived in a little modest house. Everybody knew where he lived. His phone number was public, and people left him alone because they respected him so much for that reason. We will never, ever, ever, not only the longevity, but just the way he approached his deal, we will never see the likes of that guy ever again.
No, it's no way. And the closest thing, you've got Nick Saban starting to carve his niche, but he's such a butthole, excuse my language, when it comes to as far as a personality, like a Bill Belichick. These great, great coaches and great, great minds, and then they have the personality of a, you know, a trash bag. They're just so obviously they must be inspiring to their players because they win, and they're great teachers. But they do not let the captive audience, the people that are paying the ticket prices and families who are spending hundreds of dollars just to come to a game, and you turn around and give a bland interview, you distance yourself from the very people that allow you to make $4 or $5 million, and that's not something that Coach Paterno done. He walked to the ice cream shop on campus. There was an ice cream shop as he walked past practice, and he would stop and get peach ice cream. So they created an ice cream called Peachy Paterno. So because he loved that ice cream so much, but he would walk right into the ice cream shop. There was one still on campus, a creamery that makes his own
ice
cream.
That's right. The creamery. Yep.
He would stop in there and do that, and because he wasn't a surprise to be seen walking the campus, people just blow. They felt like he was a part of the community. He wasn't this big bad coach to never be seen.
You know, it's just a different deal now. It's a shame because these guys could be so much more, and it could be so much more than it is if we demanded it. On the way out, obviously, what happened with Sandusky is just an awful thing. And
yeah,
you know, I'm talking to my brother. I grew up in a Penn State family, and I'm from there. And my brother came on the air with us in the middle of all that. And the guy literally is crying with us on the air as the news started to trickle out. I mean, it was just so devastating to everybody. And I know you have a couple minutes here.
I had a cancellation, so I'm pretty good.
Oh, okay, oh, good. What was your reaction to that, Leroy? And then how do you reconcile how? Because he Joe let a lot of us down, myself included. How's that jibe in your mind when you think about what happened?
Well, I'll speak to it in a couple of frameworks. The first, in the minds of Jerry Sandusky, you don't. I mean, you never expect. You can't wrap your mind around something like that. As I look back at the Jerry Sandusky that we all thought we knew, he not only did he duke Joe Paterno and the entire athletic program, he duked the whole state. I mean, Jerry Sandusky has ties to the governor of Pennsylvania, who was involved with the second mile and hundreds of players and thousands of donors who trusted their time, their resources, and their money in him. And parents, recruits of parents, people who are sending their kids who already had problems and trusting someone like Jerry Sandusky to help them do that. And it appears as though he just used that platform for some sick pedophile issues, major issues that he has. So in that regard, you can't wrap your head around something like that. Now, I won't get as in-depth now out of respect for, you know, what today means in Joe Paterno, but Joe Paterno gave an interview to the Washington Post, in which I've heard the audio and I've seen the full scale of that interview, and for me, it answers a lot of questions that I had in his regard relative to the decision-making for the definite positive. I needed to get the timetables. I needed to get the schedule of events. I needed to know what Joe knew and when he knew it, at what time. I needed to know what Mike McQuarrie said to him. I needed to know all of those things. And all of those things, as those facts begin to shape them out, I think, Tony, you're going to have a different and a more respectful opinion of Joe Paterno's actions. I didn't say the vice president's or the AD's actions, but I think you'll have a very, very different perspective if you look at the chain of events. And I thank God that he did have the opportunity only last week to sit down and at least voice his opinion. And I think his lawyers and everyone else has more of that through recordings and different things that have not come out yet. So I will hold your judgment in regards to the disappointments, because now that the timelines have come out, what he knew and didn't know, and I'll give you one that baffled me. In 1998, Jerry Sandusky was being investigated for sex crimes. Now, my problem that I couldn't wrap my head around was from 1998 to 2002, because that information hadn't come out, I'm like, well, Joe wouldn't let a bad study hall worker be around us. How could he let knowingly Jerry Sandusky, knowing he was being investigated in 1998, be around recruits or the second mile or even the campus? Well, in that interview, we found out that Joe Paterno, and I quote, didn't have an inkling that Jerry Sandusky was being investigated in 1998. He didn't know. Nobody knew except for Jerry Sandusky, who didn't make anyone, obviously, didn't make anyone aware that he was being investigated. So Joe Paterno didn't know he was, but that's big for me when it comes to the timetable of events, because until McQuarrie came to him in 2002, that was his first, that's the first information that he had gotten in regards to Jerry Sandusky, and these issues. And that was big for me because I couldn't put that together. Also, what was big for me was what McQuarrie told the grand jury and what he told Joe that particular night. Then the interview that came out in the Washington Post, when we hear in the grand jury how despicable what McQuarrie testified that he saw at the grand jury, that's not what he told Joe Paterno. When he came, after seeing that, when he came over and told Joe Paterno what he saw, he said, I may, and I quote, I may have saw Jerry Sandusky, or I think I saw Jerry Sandusky in an inappropriate sexual act with a young boy. One, I may have saw, I think I saw. And Joe Paterno, he said he was so upset, if you look at the Washington Post, he was so upset And he later said, I didn't give him specific details like he gave in the grand jury out of respect for Joe Paterno. So all of this time, everyone is thinking that he's told Joe Paterno these graphic details that he told in the grand jury. He did not tell him that particular night. He said, I think I saw. Well, and they said Joe Paterno at that time told him, well, look, okay, then calm down. You've done what you're supposed to do. Let me do what I'm supposed to do. They asked him, well, why did you call the police, Joe? He says, well, our procedure at Penn State and in the state of Pennsylvania. Now, in Tennessee, you see something, you immediately report it to the authorities. In Pennsylvania, you report it to your superior. Joe said he had never dealt with anything of this nature. He couldn't wrap his head around it. Now, that's what people don't understand, because I know if somebody came in and told me that my son done that, I couldn't wrap my head around it either. But for him to say he couldn't wrap his head around a man raping a child, that's supposed to be unbelievable or something. I can't wrap my head around a man raping a child. I can't visualize and see that, and I certainly wouldn't be able to visualize a guy I've known for 50 years doing it. So why can't Joe Paterno not wrap his head around that? So immediately as he's told that, his protocol in Pennsylvania by law is to go to his superior, which he did. He immediately told McQuarrie, you've done what you were supposed to do. You did the right thing. Now let me do what I'm supposed to do. He went to the AD. He went to the vice president of the university, called him up immediately and said, I think we've got a problem. And I quote, they got together. He told them what McQuarrie had told him. And this is where he said he made his mistake and he regrets it. You see him on the TVs and he said, I should have done more. That's where he said he thought that he put it in the hands of people who had more expertise and knowledge of how to deal with this, and they didn't. That's what he said. So we can sit back and talk about what we would have done, how we would have reacted, or we should have done more. The fact remains is, did he know that Jerry Sandusky was being investigated in 1998? No. And I quote, he didn't have an inkling of an idea. Did anybody make him aware of that? No. Number two, when it was reported to him in 2002, McQuarrie was not graphic in detail out of respect for Paterno. Well, he should have been out of respect for the kids, and to get Jerry off that campus immediately, he should have been as graphic as he possibly could have. But he spoke in terms of, I may have, I think I. So that's what he gave to him. He didn't give him that graphic detail. The first time Paterno heard the graphic details was in his testimony in 2002, 5 years later. Number three. I'm into it now. I might as well go. Here's another thing that clears some stuff up for me.
Yeah,
I thought that Jerry Sandusky retired in 1998 because Joe Paterno knew he was being investigated. I really did. I said, well, he must have had some ideas that he was being investigated, so he retired. Well, he didn't know that. Sandusky knew he was being investigated, but he led us to think that he was mad and retired because Joe told him he wasn't going to be the next coach of Penn State. Well, comes to find out, he didn't know he's been investigating. That's exactly what he thought. He wasn't telling Sandusky that he was not going to be the coach because he had an idea that he was been investigated. He didn't know that. He really didn't think he was the next coach of Penn State because he was too busy with matters outside of Penn State. And we found out he was busy, okay, all right. So that turned out to be a good thing, because had he thought he was capable of being the next coach of Penn State, we'll be talking about Sandusky now as a head coach, potentially, and getting caught up in this ordeal, versus Sandusky getting mad, knowing that he was being investigated, and return at that point in 1998. So I'll leave that alone there. Those are some things that when people are speculating, if you don't have the facts, if you're not going to indulge in the facts, just don't take frivolous comments out there that you know nothing about until you have the facts. And that's where I was. I was real disappointed every 24 hours that went by. I was changing, I was upset, then I was okay. I was upset, and I'm okay. I'm okay with Coach Paterno's actions relative to when, from the reports that's come out, the first and last interview he gave before he died in regards to this situation. I'm fine. I got peace. I got the peace that I needed. Because I needed to know the timeline. I needed to know what McCreary said. I needed to know what his actions were, what he found out. And I needed to know that he realized he made a mistake. And he said, I made a mistake. I turned it over to people who I thought had more expertise and could deal with this better than I could, because I didn't understand the rape of a child. And that's where everybody gets out of whack, because they understand it, I'm sure. They got it all together, the rape of the child. They can get that all in their mind. I know I can't.
No.
Let somebody come home and tell me that my son has raped a child or has raped another young. Let me try to get that right in my mind.
Yeah. And you keep saying that because in your mind, Sandusky to Paterno, in your mind, that's like a father to a son. That's the kind of relationship they have.
Well, I keep saying it now. You'll be looking at words. I keep saying it because they spent 50 years together.
Right.
That more so than the relationship, this is somebody I went to war with for 50 years. This is somebody that I entrusted young men.
Gotcha.
I entrusted Sandusky's son and Jay's son are about the same age. I mean, Joe's son, Jay, are about the same age.
I let my
you
son
hear
grow
Jay
his
saying,
house.
Hey, he was a friend of mine. I'm encouraging him through this because we grew up together.
Wow.
Their families grew up together. You think that Joe was going to let Sandusky around Jay if he knew he was a pedophile? His own son. So, yes, I'm just saying that in those. And when you get something like that that blows you away, Sam Gash, my college roommate, you know Sam, played 13 years.
Sam Gash, yeah.
Really, he's got four boys. He's taking his boys up to Sandusky's house and left them so that you could go hang out with the other guys.
No, he didn't. Dropped his kids off.
That he's not the only one. Now, what I'm saying is what do you think is going through his mind when it comes out that
oh my gosh,
this happens?
You don't think? Oh.
How's he wrapping his head around it?
Oh.
I'm just saying, people just have to be careful when they say what they would have done or what they wouldn't have done. I'm just saying that I believe Joe when he says, I couldn't wrap my head around it, okay? I gave it to people who I thought would deal with this better than I could. And not only I gave it to them, that was the protocol by law in Pennsylvania. Now, they changed it now. Since this situation, now they immediately changed it. You have to report it to the authorities no matter what. But in the state of Pennsylvania, until 2 months ago, you reported to your superior. His superior is who? The AD. And the president of the vice provost of the university. He reported it. Now, they Now we have to find out now why they got it. Why didn't they pursue it? Okay, everybody's talking about what Paterno should have done. Why didn't the grand jury pursue it? Those are the authorities. Why didn't the local policemen pursue it? Those are the authorities. Paterno turned it over to the authorities, his authority. Why didn't they pursue it?
I love your passion. I wound you all up, and now I got to wind you down. But
I'm good.
Hey, thanks for coming on and spending a few minutes with us and talking with us today about this. And thanks for showing us the emotions involved in this. You know, to hear you defend your coach, and to hear you with many people in many people's minds, to hear you defend from what Paterno, his role in that. What they're going to look at and say is the indefensible. The passion, though, that you're speaking, and I can tell that interview last week meant a lot to you in terms of for you to have some closure toward this deal. And, again, our condolences for the loss of Joe Paterno and what that meant to you and what he means to you for the rest of your life, man.
I appreciate it. He'll have an indelible, profound effect has had and will continue to. So we lost a great man. Let's celebrate that. Any denigration, the denigration needs to go towards Jerry Sandusky. He's the monster. Joe Paterno is the humanitarian, the educator, the father, the teacher of thousands and thousands. You want to see what Joe Paterno has meant? Do an investigation on what his players are doing now and the contributions they are making to society. And you may find out they're changing the world around in all of the cities that they're in. Do that.
Leroy, thank you.
Okay,
buddy. Good talking with you.
All right, thank you.
All right, Leroy Thompson, one more time.